He's the only one that can hold you up. We're in Samuel tonight. First Samuel. Chapter 22. And for Brother Breland, after a while, check out 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 10. I knew I was in the right book, just the wrong page. I've heard that tonight already, though. And there are discussions between pre-trib and save from wrath, so you need to study that out both ways. But I figure on being saved from the wrath means I'm getting out of here before it gets too awful bad. I'm getting out of here quick. Y'all can hang around if you want to, but when he hollers, "Come hither," I'm out of here. So if y'all want to hang, that's okay. If you want to see what the wrath of God looks like, but you know what I think? I think you ain't going to get much choice in that if you're a believer. He's not going to say, "If you want to hang around and see what it's going to be like, just it's okay." No. Yeah, I'm going to be on my TV up there looking down saying, "Wow, look what God's doing." But anyways, that's another story. We are now in 1 Samuel chapter 22. And we see here that we're fixing to run into some very ungodly men. We're also seeing that Saul has not let up. Saul is still chasing David round and around the world. And if we start sort of at the beginning there, it says, "David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brethren and all of his father's house heard it, they went down thither to be with him." They went for protection. They went for help. They went to the king of Adullam. And of course, I'm sure there was correspondence back and forth between his house. It wasn't like they had to go search the woods and find him. David probably sent a message, "Hey, here's where I am. You need to come here because if Saul is after me, he don't mind killing you too. He wouldn't mind taking out the whole family of David if that's what it comes down to." So they came to him for protection and for help. And everyone that was in distress, and we mentioned last week that distress could also mean just the same as us when we were lost. We were in need. We were in distress. We needed help. We needed protection. Everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, everyone that was in discontent. Ain't that all of us when we're lost? All discontent and in distress and out of whack. Gathered themselves into him, a type of Jesus Christ, and he became their captain over them, and there was with him, and they were with him about 400 men. So right now we've got about 400 men in the cave of Adullam that's hanging around with David. And this has got to be a pretty rowdy bunch because what did he just say? Everyone was distressed, everyone was content, everyone was out of whack with each other. So you're sitting here, well, just because they came to David, everything just got perfect. So here's David, he's in distress, he's running from Saul, he's in a bind, and he's got him 400 guys that's just like him, so to say, in distress and discontent and worried about what's going on. And so David went to Mizpah, to Moab, and he said unto the king of Moab, "Let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth to be with you, till I know what God will do to me." Now he understands that one day he's anointed king. He understands that Samuel has anointed him. Samuel has told him, "One day you're going to be the king." But between now and then, David's going to do everything he can to protect his family, to protect his dad, to protect his mom, to protect his brothers and sisters. All those things that may be going on. Yes, it didn't say anything about sisters, but he may have had sisters. It just don't say it. But anyways, he was protecting his whole family. And he went to the king of Moab, and you got to remember, Moab, or the Moabites, were in the lineage of David. They were, Ruth was his one of his grandmothers from way back there. So we have Ruth back there. And so we see here that some of the Moabites should have been knowing him. He knew them, that they were, and he went to the king, "Let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you, till I know what God will do for me." He's trusting in God. He's trusting that God's going to take care of things and protect things. "Till I know what God will do with me." And he brought them before the king of Moab, and he dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hole. So these people stayed with the king of Moab for a pretty good time. I don't know exactly how long David ran from Saul or Saul was chasing him, but I would figure it didn't just take place in a couple of months or a couple of years, whatever. It took a long time. And the whole time his family is dwelling there in Moab waiting for the David to be crowned king. Jesse knew he was going to be king one day. And the prophet Gad, who was with David for a long time, even into his kingship, and the prophet Gad said unto David, "Abide not in the hole, depart, and get thee into the land of Judah." Then David departed and came into the forest of Hereth. And Saul heard that David was discovered, and the men that were with him. Now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all of his servants were standing about him. Now he's still got his spear in his hand. He's still using that scepter of his spear, and he's under a tree. He's out of the castle. He's out on the ground. He's looking and wanting to find David. He's not laid up. Man, David's just one guy. Why would he bother me? He's just a dog, a dead dog as far as that. Just a little old feller. A flea is what he said at one time. But Saul is so bothered by David that he spends all his time worrying and fretting and trying to get a hold of David. He so despises David that he goes out. He's sitting under a tree at Ramah, having his spear in his hand. All of his servants were standing about him, and he's having a good pity party going on. And he says, "Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, 'Hear now, ye Benjamites. Will the son of Jesse,'" he won't even call him by name. He won't even acknowledge who he is, the son-in-law, that David, the son-in-law of the king. "The son of Jesse give every one of you a field and a vineyard and make you a captain over thousands and captains over hundreds." In other words, can David set you up? Can David, he's hiding in a cave. He's on the run. He's got 400 men. I have thousands. I am the king of Israel. I can give you anything that you need. I can protect you. I can give you lands. I can give you prosperity. I can make you a captain or a colonel or a general. Can David do that? He's trying to get into their head and say, "What can David do for you? I got it all. I am the king. That all of you may conspire against me." He's sitting here. Look, y'all are all on David's side. You're all against me. You're all against my program. What can David do for this? He says, "All of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me in, and my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me." I'm the king. Man, y'all ought to be just lifting me up and making me feel good, and you ought to all be on my side. And the first time David messed up, you should have just killed him and chased him out of here. None of y'all even feel sorry for me. Man, I feel so bad. I'm so mistreated. I am the king, and not one of you shows me my son's against me. Not one of you shows me David's against me. Not one of you came to me and says, "Oh, king, live forever. Let's smite old David and get rid of him." Nobody did that. Nobody was sorry for me. Nobody worried about me. Nobody was caring that the servants against me to lie in wait as at this day. Saul has got his mindset that David's out there just waiting to kill him. Now, that's not what David's mindset is at all. We know that David has been everything but against Saul. He's been loyal. He's been right there beside him. He's been a friend of the king. He's done everything he can to be honest and upright with the king. Every time the king has sent him out to do whatever he's supposed to do, he goes and does it. And yet, Saul says, "He's a traitor. He hates me. And all of you who like him hate me also. All of you who were singing those songs about David killing his thousands and me just a thousand, y'all are all against me." Man, Y'all don't like me. I'm the king. And yet you give him all the honor and all the glory and all the praise. He says, you are all confederates against me. He's having this pity party talking about nobody would show him the truth, and then old Doeg shows up. Now, I don't like Doeg. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse. He even gave Saul a little credit. He called David by the son of Jesse just like Saul had. You know, whenever you imitate somebody the way they do things, that's a form of flattery. Doeg here is saying, King, I saw the son of Jesse. I saw him coming to Nob, or Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. So he says, look, old Saul, I was up there at the temple. I was up there at Nob, and I was up there saying my prayers and all that. And I want you to know, King, you're sitting here saying nobody will tell you anything. I want you to know, Ralph, that I saw him there. I saw him and Ahimelech. I saw Ahimelech giving him food. I saw Ahimelech giving him armaments. I saw Ahimelech blessing him with the Lord. I saw these things going. I want you to know, Saul, I'm on your team. I'm going to let you know what's happening. Right. I'm going to tell you all about what David was doing. He says, and he inquired of the Lord. Now, during the part of it where David was there, it doesn't ever say anything about he inquired of the Lord, but later on in the chapter it does. So we're going to assume that he did inquire of the Lord. But the thing is about inquiring of the Lord for a normal person was not normally what the high priest would do, especially with Urim and Thummim. How you say that word? Anyways, and he inquired of the Lord for him and gave him victuals and gave him a sword of Goliath the Philistine. In other words, Ahimelech was counterfeit with him. He was in this conspiracy to conspire against you, King. He gave him food. Now, in these day and time, if you've got somebody who's doing treason or whatever, somebody gives them food and armament and all that, regardless of how innocent they may think they are, they're part of the conspiracy. Right now we have Ahimelech as being helper to David. Ahimelech is in treason against Saul. Now we've got to do a little short sidebar here. Do you remember Eli? Do you remember Hophni and Phinehas? Do you remember what the man of God came and told Eli? He says, your two sons are going to die in one day. You're going to die, and the priesthood is going to be taken from your family. Yep. Right here in this chapter is where God finishes up what he says is going to happen to Eli and his family. We don't catch that right off the bat, but this is God saying, Eli, the high priest's family, has been judged, and now in this chapter, the judgment comes to fruition. Now you say, well, Doeg's doing just what Saul wants him to do. And Saul's doing just what Saul wants to do. But whether they know it or not, they did what God said was going to happen. Does that make it right? No. God didn't sin, but God passed judgment on Eli and his family. God passed judgment, and he uses wicked men to accomplish what he wants to do. And God has not sinned in this thing. God's not been unjust in this thing. But these two men will be judged for their sin, for what they did. Just like when the men went into Egypt, he said, I'm going to put you in Egypt, I'm going to raise you up, and then one day when the Egyptians turn against you, I'm going to go against them and wipe them out. And you say, well, if he never put them in Egypt, he wouldn't have done that. Well, God knows what he's doing. What can I say? It says, and the king sent to call Ahimelech, the priest, the son of Ahitub. Now that's the high priest, or his daddy, and all his father's house, the priests that were at Nob, and they came, all of them, to the king. So he says, all right, somebody go up there and get Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, at the house, and all their priests that are with them, and you bring them here to me. Now, we only know that he spoke to Ahimelech. He probably didn't speak not to the whole pile of the rest of them. In fact, we're going to get down to the numbers here. They was 85 of them. Now, we know the day that David was there, he didn't say 81, 82, 83, hi, I'm glad to see y'all, how y'all doing, bless you, and all that stuff. We know that most of those guys never saw David. In fact, from the script we got, only Ahimelech saw David and Doeg. So here we are. The king sent to and called Ahimelech, the high priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, and the priest, and the nobles, and they came all to the king. And Saul said, "Hear now, thou son of Ahitub." He didn't even say high priest. He didn't say Ahimelech. He did just like he was talking to David, "Thou son of Jesse." He had contempt of this man. He was scornful of this man. He wouldn't even acknowledge that he's the high priest of God. He said, "Thou son of Ahitub." He says, and he answered, "Here I am, my lord." Now, Ahimelech didn't do back to Saul what Saul did to him. He acknowledged him as being lord. He acknowledged him as being king. He acknowledged with great respect his authority. But if you remember, just before Saul became king, who would all the people have came to? To Ahimelech, because he was the high priest. That's who they would have had to came to if they wanted an answer from God, if they wanted any kind of things from God. They wouldn't have came to Saul. They would have came to Ahimelech. And now Saul is king, and Saul is saying, "I am against you, Ahimelech, because you helped David." Now this is God's priest. These are God's priests under priestless. All of these men were holy men of God, raised up in the family of Ahitub, and all in the family of Eli, and all doing what they're supposed to be doing with the sacrifices and the things about the sacrifices. And he says, "Hear now, thou son of Ahitub." And he answered, "Here am I, my lord." And Saul said to him, "Why have ye conspired against me?" I'm sitting here in his mind, he said, "Huh? Do what? Why have I conspired against you? What in the world have I done against you, King Saul? What have I ever done against you, King Saul? Why have thou conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse?" And he said, "Wait a minute, whoa, whoa, whoa. Jesse is your most highly decorated soldier. David is one of your most highest acknowledged men. David has always done everything you've ever told him to do, King. David has always went out and done all the battles you sent him on. He has conquered. He has whipped the giant for you. He went out and got married to your daughter for you. You have raised him up, made him your own family son-in-law." He says, "Do what? I have conspired against you? What? Huh? In that thou hast given bread and a sword and inquired of God for him." In other words, you even got God involved in this thing, Ahimelech. You even got God to look into this thing for David and give him encouragement and strength and a blessing. First of all, you gave him food, which you shouldn't have because he's against me. You gave him a sword, which you shouldn't because he's against me. And now you've got God on his side praying for him. He says, "Man, Ahimelech, you have went totally against me. You've went totally against everything that I stand for. You should have known these things, Ahimelech. You've given bread to him. You've helped my enemy. You've given sword to him. You've given him armament. And you have went to God for him that he should rise against me and lie in wait as at this day." You went to God for a plan for him to whip me. Now that we know that he didn't do that. David was not trying to get a plan together to get God on his side. God was not trying to get God to say, "Oh God, give me a plan so I can go whip Saul." David was just trying to get out of Dodge. He just didn't want to die. So he takes off to hide so he hadn't got to fight. Who would he have to fight? His best friend, Jonathan? And his, some of the people, his own family members? He's just trying to get out of town. And he says, then Ahimelech answered to the king and says, And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David? In other words, David has always been true to you, King. You're telling me that he's in treason. You're telling me that he's conspiring against you. And yet, as far as the whole group of Israelites know, he's your number one worker. He's your most faithful soldier. He's your most honest man. Which the king, and he says, not only that, but he among the servants, and he's also your son-in-law. I mean, why in the world would I think your own son-in-law is out to get you? I mean, you're the one that brought him in and said, you could have my first daughter, and then you brought him in and said, now you can have my second daughter, and you married him to him. So, man, how in the world? I'm sitting up here in Nob, minding my own business. David comes up, says he's on an errand for you. What am I supposed to think? David's the most uprightest guy in the world. If he's on an errand for the king and he needs something, I'm going to help him out. I'm thinking I'm helping the king. I'm doing things for the king. I'm doing right. And goeth out and to thy bidding and is honorable in thine house. In other words, David is the most upright feller I know. He's making a thing to the king saying, are you sure you got this right? I mean, David is the most upright feller we know. If he's not right, who is? And he says, did I then begin to inquire of God for him? And it's possible that he had inquired to God before. He says, it's possible that maybe at some other time when God was going, when David was going out against the Philistines, he might have stopped in at Nob and said, hey, Ahimelech, would you pray and see how the battle's supposed to go or how it's not supposed to go? Or what we should do or what we should not do. Because David's known to go to the high priest and get direction. David was a very godly man. But he says, did I then begin to inquire to him, of God for him? Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto this servant, nor of all the house of my father. For thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. In other words, I've been up there in the temple praying and making sacrifices, doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know what you're doing at the house down here. I don't know what's going on in the king's courthouse. I don't have no messenger run up there. Let me tell you what's happening up here so we can get together, king and priest. That's what should have been going on. They should have been talking to each other, conferring with each other and getting blessed from each other. But Saul had been rejected by God. There wasn't much need for him to go to the temple for much because God wasn't talking to him too much. He says, why would you want to impute this to me, King? I mean, King, look, me and my children and my family, we didn't know any of this stuff was going on. We just thought we were helping the king. Now, if he had been in his right mind, he'd been thinking and all that, he'd say, oh, bless you, Ahitub, Ahimelech, and going about your business, and we'll let bygones be bygones, but because God had already said judgment, that wasn't going to happen. Now, Saul wasn't saying, I'm going to wipe these people out in the name of God. And that ain't what he was doing either. He in no way knew he was doing this in the name of God. And it wasn't for God, because God, while he said this was going to happen, he never caused the cause. It says, and the Bible does, and the king said, he didn't even have a good trial here. And the king said, thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech. Well, that would have been one thing. Ahimelech was the only one that talked to David as far as we know. Thou and all thy father's house. So Saul sitting here, you're going to die, Ahimelech. And not only you, I'm going to kill everybody in your family. I'm going to kill every last one of you guys. You know what? I don't like y'all. Because God had already rejected Saul. Saul already had this evil spirit thing going on. He wasn't in love with God because everything God was doing was for David. Why am I going to help God's people? If I get rid of all these priests, David has nobody else to go to, right? Then he says, and the king said unto the footmen or the men that were around him and
folks there, the probably maybe had Abner and those guys right there, the footmen stood by him. Turn and slay the priest of the Lord, because their hand is also with David.
He says, look, guys, he had his crowd of folks there with him. He called in Ahimelech. He had all his soldiers there handy around that was guarding him. He says, look, kill him right there. Jump on him. Slay him right now. Kill him. And it says, what did they do? You would have thought maybe they could have said, our king has lost it. Our king has flipped. They could have said, we're going to go ahead and tie up the king. We're going to go ahead and overthrow the king right here because the king has turned against God. You would have thought they could have done or would have done that. But instead, they just stepped back and said, no, we're not going to touch this guy. We're not going to do this thing, king. They'd rather be to have the king mad at them instead of doing what they said. And then he says, and because they knew when he fled, and turn and slay the priest of the Lord, because their hand is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. In other words, because they knew he fled and they wouldn't show it. In other words, just because he ran up to Nob, got him some bread, asked for some blessing from the priest, because you knew it, you should have come told me. If they'd have just come told me right then and there, it'd have been okay. But no, they didn't tell. Of course, they didn't know nothing. What you going to go tell if you don't know? And David said, because they knew, and because they knew when David fled, and they slew, and they showed me not, but the servants of the king would not put their hand to fall upon the priest of the Lord. These guys had a fear of God. These guys might not have feared, wasn't afraid of Saul that much, but they knew that we don't touch God's anointed people. We don't touch. He said, okay, well, if they're not going to touch, how are you talking about all this stuff going to happen? Well, here we go. Here's old Doeg again. Doeg is here. He ain't never left. He's been listening to the whole thing. And the king said to Doeg, turn thou and fall upon the priest. And Doeg the Edomite. That ought to be a word. Remember Edomite? Esau, the father of the Edomites. Here we have Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest. And it says priests, and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear the linen ephod. That doesn't mean they were all the high priests, but they all wore the linen suits, and they all had the linen breeches, and they all had did the things of God. One of them being the high priest, who wore the bonnet and the breastplate and all that, but the rest of them wearing the linen suits like the other lower priests did. He killed 85 priests of God right there in that spot. Doeg wasn't too much of a godly feller either. He had no fear of God. He had no worry about God. He was the man that God had placed there to do what he had to do. But he was an Edomite. Same family of Elimelech. No, the Malachites. The Malachites came out of the Edomites. I'll get all these mites together here in a minute. But you remember here, when Saul was told to go kill the Amalekites and wipe them out, every man, woman, child, sheep, ox, whatever, he saved the king and all the sheep and the cattle. He had mercy. Yep. But when it come to God's people, kill them right now, kill them dead. That's how far Saul had went over the... He had compassion on the enemy of his people, but he hated God himself. Doeg fell upon the priest, and Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest, and he slew there that day 85 persons that did wear the linen ephod. But that's not all. You say, that's a lot. But let's read the next verse. and Nob, the city of the priest. Now, we know that somewhere in the future, the Gibeonites come to David and say, the Benjamites did us great wrong, and they killed, what, seven of the Benjamites or whatever, hang them on a tree. But Mephibosheth got saved from that deal because of Jonathan. But anyways, he says here, and they killed the city of Nob, which was probably who hung around and cut all the wood and stuff for the priest? The Gibeonites. So he says, and they went and they killed or slew all the people of the city of the priest, and smote he with the edge of the sword both men and women and children and sucklings and ox and asses and sheep with the edge of the sword. They showed no mercy whatsoever on the priest city, on the priests, and anybody else that lived in that city that did any work there. Every one of them slew them. That had to take Saul and some of his men for that part. Doeg might have jumped on the priest here, but they went on down the road. And they, see, they weren't at the Nob when this was going on. They killed the priest where Saul was, and then rode down the road and killed all the rest of the people who were in Nob. Every man, woman, child, everything. That was a pretty vicious day that day. Oh, Doeg. I bet God's got a place for him. I ain't going to try to speculate. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Ibethar, escaped and fled after David. Now, we're figuring that Ibethar was probably left behind to make sure no unauthorized person went into the temple or into the tabernacle. Nobody was going to go in there where the holy stuff was. No one was going there where the sacrifices, where the shewbread was or any of that. So somebody had to stay behind and say, you don't come in. That was his job, to protect what was left while the rest of them were talking to Saul. But undoubtedly, when he saw all these folks coming, somebody run to him ahead of him or whatever, says, let me tell you what just happened to all your family. Let me tell you what these guys are coming to do to this city. So the first thing he does, he grabs a hold of is the Urim and the Thummim and the breastplate and all those things that the holy, because now he is the high priest. He wasn't until a while ago, but now he's the high priest because his father's dead and his family's dead. There's nobody left. He's the last one. And he says he gathered up these things and he escaped and fled after David. So he's headed toward David. He's got all this stuff, and Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priest. Now, this next chapter and all, there's a little bit of overlap in the two things. We're not going to go there tonight, but we're thinking that in the next chapter, David goes to this city to defend it. Abiathar hadn't quite got to him yet. But to keep this in the context, Abiathar comes and he shows David that Saul had slain the high priest, everything that was with the priest. And David said unto Abiathar, I knew it. He's sitting there when he was with Ahimelech. He saw Doeg over there. He knows Doeg's a Benjamite. He knows Doeg is over all these. He knew who Doeg was. He says, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul. I knew what he would be like. I know what kind of man he was. I knew that he was going to go straight to Saul and tell him everything that was going on there at the tabernacle, everything that Ahimelech had done, all about the bread, all about the sword, all about the help. I just knew in my mind that bad was going to come. I knew what he was going to do. He carried that guilt with him throughout most of his life, that he was the cause of everything that happened to Ahimelech and his family. He says, and David said unto Abiathar, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul, and I have occasioned the death of all the persons in thy father's house. In other words, I had a feeling. I just knew how ruthless this guy was and how mad Saul was. I just knew that because he had seen what was going on, I was afraid for your family. And not only was I afraid for your family, but it has actually happened just like I feared. These men have killed your family just like I was afraid they would. And then he says to him, abide thou with me, fear not. Now wait a minute, David's running for his life. He's going to tell somebody, you just hang around with me and fear not. For he that is seeketh thy life, or my life, he also seeks your life. So we're a better place to be. Well, you know he's coming after me, and you know he's coming after you, so why don't we just stay together? Why don't we just companion together? Because your enemy is my enemy, but your God is my God. Stay here. Abide with me. Lead me. Guide me. Direct me. He says, but with me thou shalt be in safeguard. In other words, there's 400 guys with me with swords and spears and stuff like that. They might not be the most friendly bunch, but here is better than being out there alone running from Saul by yourself. There's no family left for you to go to. There's nobody left for you to go hide with. Stay here with me. Your enemy is my enemy. Abide with me. And I shall give you safeguard. I shall protect you. I'll watch over you. And next week is going to be more exciting than this week. So, you have to tune in again. But if you run into Doeg anywhere, we can tell him just how bad he is. Because there wasn't nothing good in Doeg that I could see. And he was over all the herdmen. What kind of guy would that be? He had to be a rough taskmaster. But we know one thing. He sure didn't love God. He didn't have any love for God whatsoever. Nor God's people. And we've got to understand there are people out there just like that right now. There are people that can't stand God. You'd say, well, why don't God do something? He will. He will. But if they can't stand God, they sure don't like us. So, Brother Neil, would you pray for us, please?
Our most gracious and loving Heavenly Father, we just thank you for the blessings of the day. We thank you for your word. We thank you for what you presented to us tonight. Challenge our hearts, challenge our minds. Lord, I ask that you bless each and every family that's represented here. Thank you for your son's death on the cross and the blood, the salvation that he gave to us and that he called us and brought us to him. Gabe.